In this episode, we talk AEW Dynasty. We have a new AEW World Champion, along with a Match of the Year candidate. We also talk about the WWE Women's Division and do they need a mid-card title. All that and more on today's episode of the WrestleManiac UK Show. Let's go. What's up, people? It's your boy Mex, the WrestleManiac, if you will, back again with another podcast episode for ya. Hope you are doing very, very well. I apologize, this podcast is one day late, but I thought there is no real point putting out a podcast this week without AEW Dynasty happening, and boy oh boy am I happy I waited that one extra day, because what a show. I mean, we all spoke about how great that card was going into the show, and you know what? That card delivered. It was such a good show. Those last four matches especially, brilliant, brilliant stuff. Some of the best wrestling we're going to see this year. So yeah, I was very happy I waited. I thought it was a really good decision by myself, if I do say so myself. But yeah, hope you guys didn't miss me too much. I hope you've had a really good start to your week. I hope you had a good weekend as well. It's not all going to be AEW talk on this particular episode. We are going to squeeze some stuff from WWE in as well. So I know some of you don't watch AEW, whatever your reasons may be, that's absolutely fine, it's your decision. But yeah, there will be some WWE chat later on in the show, but we can't avoid it. AEW, they are the Don Dada when it comes to putting on pay-per-views. You know, Tony Khan is said to, you know, do some of his best work making matchups, as opposed to kind of, you know, long-term booking all around the TV shows and the pay-per-views and everything like that. So I don't know. I think that's fair to say right now, he's definitely more pay-per-view heavy in terms of doing his best work, definitely pay-per-view heavy over week-to-week TV. But like I said, largely week-to-week TV for AEW has been good since the beginning of the year, to be honest. It was just the one week a couple weeks ago when we had, you know, the CCTV footage on show and Will Ospreay replied to Triple H and all of that kind of stuff. That's probably been the worst episode. And yeah, in general, the other stuff that happened on the show was just, you know, mediocre by their standards. So yeah, that was the worst show of the year. But AEW claim that this is the where the best wrestle, yeah? If the best wrestle here, they focus on wrestling. And when they focus on wrestling, honestly, no one's better. No one's better when it comes to doing that stuff in the ring than the AEW roster. Let's just keep focusing on wrestling, innit? But I am going to kind of touch upon that conversation a bit more further down the line. So without further ado, I think it's time we get into this week's conversations. And like I said, we have a new AEW World Champion. So I don't think there's any place better to start than there. After months and months of nearly moments, nearly ascending to that position, nearly becoming the guy, Swerve Strickland has finally done it. Swerve Strickland is the AEW World Champion, and it is a real feel-good factor. You know, I wouldn't quite say it's Kofi Kingston winning at WrestleMania 35, but there is something really special about this for me personally. For me, someone that is like really interested in telling stories and some long-term satisfaction, I think we've really got that in watching Swerve's ascent to the top of AEW. Now, of course, Swerve got to AEW via losing his job in WWE. If all had been well, he may still be in WWE, and only God knows what he would be doing in WWE. No one better than Swerve himself told the story that, you know, they called me, they reached out to me, they tried to bring me back. And we saw the rest of his Hit Row members, you know, return to WWE. And it didn't really work out well for them. Now, you know, AJ Francis has gone on to find himself on the indies, is doing some fun stuff there. They've tried to package Asante the Adonis, and hasn't really worked just yet, but it looks like they're actively trying to find a place for him. And B-Fab has found herself alongside Bobby Lashley and Street Profits as of recent times. So it's only now that these guys are really finding their feet in WWE or elsewhere. Whereas Swerve Strickland, he came into AEW, and I can't lie, I was one of the people that I thought, okay, what is he going to do here? We had him with Keith Lee. He had a solid tag run with Keith Lee, but then they never actually paid off their story between the two of them that they were trying to tell. And after that, he was just really floundering for a bit until he found this kind of current iteration of the Mogul Embassy, because Lord knows they went through some iterations with some certain people that don't even work for the company anymore. And Swerve Strickland has went from a place of, right, we need to do something with him because he's obviously talented and people like him, to a point where, you know, I hate to use the phrase, but he became undeniable. He was the people's choice. That Full Gear match that he had with Hangman Adam Page, you know, everything leading into that match was brilliant. Their match at WrestleDream and stuff. But that match was the moment where people said, right, Swerve Strickland, when are we doing it? When are we putting the AEW World Championship on him? This was no longer a token gesture just to give a black man a championship and say, oh yeah, we done it, and we kind of done it in record timing. We didn't wait 10, 15, 20 years to do it. We've done it now. This was not that at all. This was someone that had organically got over with the crowd. And absolute kudos to Prince Nana. I'll hold my hands up now. I said that Prince Nana added nothing to Swerve's act at one point. I said that. I thought like Prince Nana was very good. I've seen Prince Nana all about the kind of independent scene through the years and thought he was good, he's a good talent and everything like that. But what he was doing for Swerve at the time, I couldn't see it. How is this, you know, making me any more invested? Or how are you selling Swerve to me through what you're doing? And this is even before the dance came. And it's funny, weeks after I said that, literally a matter of like 2 to 3 weeks after I said that, the dance happened. And when the dance happened, you know, that was something that fans had to, you know, hook onto. Every time Swerve came out, we now have something to do. It's not just Swerve's house anymore. We have a dance to do. We loved it. The dance went viral. Like, it was incredible. This was just natural, organic crowd swell. People falling in love with this guy. In ring, Swerve's never been in question. He's never been in question. More than a solid wrestler. Very good. But it was everything around him. How do we get Swerve to that next upper echelon? And I don't want to say it was just the dance, but the dance played a key factor in it, as well, of course, as the story with Hangman Adam Page. I think Adam Page deserves massive praise. You know, how generous and giving he was in every single one of those Swerve matches he had, because he knew we have to work hard as a team, as a collective, to get this guy over. Not like it was do or die or anything like that, but they knew they had something. It's just we need a solid story to really show the crowd this is one of our guys. And now he's gone on, he's won the AEW World Championship, and I put him in the category of a Hangman Adam Page and MJF. He is Swerve Strickland, and he sits alongside those names. And one thing those names have in common is that AEW truly made these guys. Now, to a degree, Hangman Adam Page was just arriving. When AEW came into business, he was on the cusp. He was just kind of arriving at that kind of main event level spot. But the story with Kenny Omega pushed him in there. MJF, solely AEW, all the work he did with AEW, people putting him over, people wanting this guy to succeed. Maybe he threw his toys out the pram at a point, but MJF at that point, you know, there wasn't anyone else that would kind of argue against MJF becoming champion. And that's where we find ourselves now, post all the Hangman feuds and all of that kind of stuff. You couldn't argue that the right person to become AEW world champion was Swerve Strickland. From All In last year, to put him in that tag match with Sting in Wembley in front of 70 odd thousand people, that was the moment that they wanted Swerve Strickland to pay off. That investment that they made in him, it was time to, you know, make it blossom, if you like. And he went from All In, to then having that great match at Wrestle Dream with Hangman, repeating it a month later at Full Gear in that Texas Death Match, to having an outstanding run in the Continental Classic, to then, you know, it should have been Revolution. Let's be honest. Revolution is when he should have been crowned, but Revolution was also the point where Sting was retiring. So Sting had the main event. And I literally think it's just a thing where they didn't want to crown a new champion, not in the main event. And maybe they didn't want the whole Sting thing to kind of overshadow him. So in that case, it's a right choice that they held off. But by Dynasty, you could not hold off anymore. It was time to cash out. The investment had matured. And we're looking now at a landscape where AEW have crowned a deserving champion, an organic champion, the first ever African-American champion. It's all deserved. And I have to kind of congratulate and give big praise to AEW for following through. It's very easy for someone from WWE to come and you shoot them to the moon and you give them the titles and all of that kind of stuff. And I know when Swerve left WWE, he wasn't of that level just yet anyway, but you know, he has worked so hard to get this spot, and not just in the ring. I think the stuff he's done for the culture, bringing more of like the hip hop scene and the, you know, pop culture scene into AEW through what he does, the music or the podcast, all of that kind of stuff. He's been a true representative. And, you know, now he is the AEW world champion. And this is the biggest way that they can say thank you and show him that, you know, we are in your corner, we're backing you, sort of thing. So it's super, super impressive to see that, you know, Swerve Strickland, this guy that, you know, has been somewhat of an indie darling in the last 5 to 10 years, worked his way through the indies. He's now the top dog of one of the biggest promotions in the world. There's no other way to slice it. He has done a fantastic job. The investment has paid off. And this is why you just have to keep investing in these younger talents, in these talents that clearly want it. I think one of the things I love about Swerve was that I know that WWE came for him maybe illegally to try and get him back into the company. And he very firmly, I even said at a point he snitched, but he very firmly said, no, like, I am AEW. I'm not going to go back there, where things probably would have been easy for him. He knows the system, he knows the people and all that kind of stuff. He made himself uncomfortable. He made himself uncomfortable and said, I have to do it here at this point. Because ultimately, let's be honest, that WWE job will always be there. It will always be there. Let him do it on this foreign ground, on this new soil. And he's done it. He has absolutely done it. So big shout out to AEW for absolutely backing this talent. Big shout out to Swerve Strickland for making it happen. Yeah, like, it's not easy. It is not easy. So he's absolutely made it happen, and the investment has paid off in a huge way. Swerve Strickland, AEW world champion. The investment has paid off in a huge way. So as I do, I watch Dynamite. I see Chris Jericho, one of my favorites, but I know the crowd just aren't feeling Chris Jericho right now. Chris Jericho, here in his free time, he likes to trademark stuff. He trademarks the Learning Tree. And you're like, where are you going with this one, Chris? Yeah, we've seen you trademark a lot of things and, you know, try to bring a lot of different characters, personas, things like that to fruition. The reinvention of Chris Jericho, it's a thing. It's a thing, we can't deny it, but where are you going with this one? And he's got his Lionheart gimmick right now, and he's running around with Hook and trying to tell Hook, you need to listen to me, you need to learn under me, I can show you a thing or two. And we get to the point of AEW Dynasty where Chris Jericho is facing Hook for the FTW Championship under FTW rules, and Chris Jericho walks out as the FTW Champion. And people are going crazy. People think, why is he beating Hook for ultimately Hook's championship, Hook's father's championship. And for me, it's like, this is what Chris Jericho does. Chris Jericho will tell you, oh, I haven't won that title before. And he wins the title. He done this with the Ring of Honor championship. He literally said, you know what? I've never won the Ring of Honor title before. And a matter of weeks later, who's the new Ring of Honor world champion? The Ocho, Chris Jericho. Like, this is what he does. And the conversation here today is that now he's beaten Hook, someone that is deemed as like a upcomer and, you know, someone that the company is invested in. After all, his dad has high stakes in the company. His dad's a commentator in the company, Taz. Does Chris Jericho, does all he do is, you know, kill the youngsters of AEW? Is he a detriment to these youngsters? Because, I mean, some of the case studies we're going to look at today, let's start with none other than Sammy Guevara. Sammy Guevara is undoubtedly a fantastic wrestler. We can't speak on that one. He is a fantastic wrestler when it comes to the in-ring stuff. And I know he's had a few mishaps, a few dangerous spots, a few bad decisions on his part, but he's a great wrestler. But outside of the ring, in what, nearly five years at this point, how has Sammy Guevara moved on and developed as a talent? Can anyone answer that question? Because I think the answer is not very much, if at all. This is someone that was on the first ever episode of Dynamite. This company brought him in from early, backed him from early. He was with Jericho from early. I think by the end of that first ever episode of Dynamite, he was part of Jericho's inner circle. Remember that group? Like, he has been hand in hand with Jericho pretty much for his entire AEW experience, for AEW's entire TV experience. It's been Sammy Guevara and Jericho. And Sammy Guevara isn't any higher up on the card, isn't, like, you know, growing at the pace of some of his other pillars or, you know, age mates. Sammy Guevara, I can't see one way he's benefited from, you know, being paired with Jericho. And that might be, what he might have got better at might be things like psychology, things we can't, that aren't quite tangible right now, that we can't quite kind of, you know, put a metric against. But I'll tell you what, every time he splits from Jericho, they put him in another group, they put him in a tag team, or they return him to Jericho. So I don't know whether it's his attitude or whatever that hasn't quite developed, where they can't trust him alone like some of his counterparts. It's Jericho or bust for Sammy Guevara. And yeah, I don't understand with the whole Jericho, putting in with Jericho, why he hasn't kicked on. Because surely you're putting him with Jericho so he can kick on as a performer himself. He didn't need to be with Jericho to learn anything about professional wrestling. It was to be a more performer, to be a more well-rounded character. But that clearly hasn't happened yet. Or the company just don't fancy him, one or the other. Let's look at the next case study. Daniel Garcia. Someone that was a professional wrestler through and through. AEW through and through. Someone that we all said should have been part of the Blackpool Combat Club. And the Blackpool Combat Club members said that, yeah, they reckon that he should have been a part of them too. But he joined the JAS. Jericho Appreciation Society. And you know what? Danny Garcia is someone that I can say that I think that that move benefited him. It made him more than just a one-dimensional wrestler that just came out and wrestled. Like, I've said this before. At this rate, I'm going to put it on a t-shirt. Wrestling alone does not pay the bills. It doesn't. Like, you need more. But to become that guy, you need more. And I do feel like his stint in the JAS, as painful as it may have been for some, I did enjoy large parts of it. It did make him more into, you know, the quote unquote sports entertainer. He became a better performer. And now that he's not with Jericho anymore and he's low key shook off Angelo Parker and Daddy Magic as well, even though Daddy Magic is still somewhat affiliated with him, you can see he is still, you know, one of the up and coming gems when it comes to professional wrestling and his in-ring ability, but his promos, his ability to command the room, his performance alongside the moves he does, he's learned that kind of showman, you know, thing that goes with wrestling. So I would say that that actually done him some good. But was it really like, you know, can we credit that to Jericho? I think so, but I don't know if everyone will, one of them ones. So that's kind of 1-1. One that failed in Sammy Guevara and one that done very well in Danny Garcia. The last person I guess we'll have to look at now is Hook. Now, I know Hook hasn't been, you know, joined at the hip with Jericho for as long as some of these other guys were, but Hook is, you know, he has a great aura about him. I think it's faded in recent times, but he does have a good aura around him. And pairing him with Jericho, I guess, again, it's more for the character stuff as opposed to, you know, professional wrestling, what happens within the ring. I think that's pretty okay. And his dad was Taz, who was a pretty okay wrestler. So, yeah, I think he will be all right when it comes to that side of things. But what has Hook got from Jericho through all the stuff they've been doing? And granted, it hasn't been anywhere near as long as JAS or Inner Circle and stuff like that. But this is another case study where right now, where Jericho holds the FTW championship over his head, it's like, right, that's another person he's not really worked out for. It's adding to the list and fans are becoming more and more concerned. Listen, for me, I don't feel like these guys are going to necessarily die at the hands of Jericho, which I think fans believe. But I do think that, you know, sometimes it is very hard to see the benefits of Jericho with them. Now, of course, I've said Danny Garcia. I think, you know, I would accredit that one to Jericho. But there are some others that are a bit more detrimental. And it's just like, yeah, did this work? So it'll be interesting to hear from you guys. And if you think Chris Jericho is killing these guys, is it like a Hogan type complex? And it's very funny that, you know, people are kind of putting this hand in hand with Jericho, because Jericho, you know, very famously, one of the reasons he left WCW was because the youngsters weren't getting an opportunity. But from many circles of fans, they're talking like Jericho is only putting himself on TV and putting himself in these positions to get, you know, the rub and championships and stuff like that. People say he's booking himself like Hogan. I've seen that all day today, which is funny, which is really funny to me, to be honest. So, man, I don't know. You guys let me know what you think, because I think Chris Jericho is phenomenal. He's one of my favorites. This is difficult, though. I definitely hear what people are saying. I know where they're coming from. Do I agree with all of it? Is he killing youngsters? I don't know. But right now, there's enough evidence to question Chris Jericho. Now, we can't talk AEW Dynasty without talking about Will Ospreay. Billy Goat. This guy is unbelievable. He is fantastic. He is the best wrestler on the planet right now. The absolute best wrestler on the planet. What he does between the ring, outside the ring, on the sides, on the barricades, this guy is incredible. And I just feel like he is the leader of the new school. Like, you know, you listen to people nowadays and they're like, you know, my favorite wrestler was a Shawn Michaels, a Stone Cold Steve Austin, a Bret Hart, all of these legendary names. We are, you know, a class away of people saying that they grew up watching Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay was their guy. And he absolutely deserves all of these praises and accolades, because he is a terrific wrestler. And let's be honest, he's been a terrific wrestler for a very, very long time now. But now he is on the stage where people can see that he is just one of the world's best. And I don't even know any other way to put it. Like, when he was in Japan, he was accused of being, you know, the flippy flip guy, the flip flopper. All he knew was choreography and flips and stunts and all of that kind of stuff. And maybe at the time, to a degree, it was true, but he's far developed past that. And to be honest, if you have that kind of opinion on him now, it's just, you're just reiterating something you've heard someone else say online, or you're not watching wrestling with your eyes. Literally, like, because he is so much more than that. This is someone that, even if you look at that Will Ospreay that people accused of being a flip-flopper or whatever, that guy is long gone. The build, the physical build of this guy now is so different. And it's not just the high impact designer, high flying moves that he's capable of. He hits you with strikes. He can grapple. He can really wrestle. Yeah. The combinations, the sequences, everything like that. Like, there is nothing that is impossible for this guy. And it doesn't matter what your style is, because he'll find a way to mesh and give you the best match you've ever had in your life. He's literally a five-star walking machine. And it's crazy to me to think that, you know, WWE didn't make the effort to sign him as much as almost they claimed that they wanted him. They made a lot of noise, like, we tried to sign Will Ospreay, blah, blah, blah. From Ospreay's accounts, it was like, well, they gave me a bit of a half-hearted offer. And then, of course, the package of how often I'm going to wrestle, all of that stuff, wasn't as inviting as AEW's. So, yeah, AEW was where I wanted to be. I think WWE truly shat the bed with that one. I genuinely think that WWE were maybe... thought he was still the flippy flop guy, and he was just heavy on matches, and he didn't know anything about entertaining and performing outside of said matches. And I think it's really surprising that that's, if that was their line of thinking, then it's almost concerning who is doing your scouting, who is looking at the talents outside, and, you know, people you want to bring into to WWE. Now, at the same time, and I don't want to get too into this, it looks like more than anything, WWE is heavily invested in its youth, NXT, the Performance Center, the NIL program. And it's like, why do we need to spend loads of money on these current guys when we can wait a couple of years and build the next guy, or who could be the next guy? Invest in those kind of people, like we see with Carmelo Hayes, a Bron Breakker. Those guys are going to be main event guys, but it's not now. You see what I mean? Whereas Will Ospreay was a, we are getting a main event guy now. So it's very interesting to see the different tactics, but I still truly think that WWE shat the bed. And obviously that led to the comments of, you know, Triple H, which was bitter. It was bitter. There's no way to say it. It was very kind of below the belt. Like, oh, you know, what did he say? If you need to work half the time and all of this kind of stuff, you don't want to grind. I don't want you in my company anyway. Yeah, there's no need for that, because, you know, people work smarter. You get what I mean? It's like, people work smarter, especially in this day and age where we have so much more education about injuries, concussion protocol, all of these kind of things. Why do I want to keep working, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, running my body into the ground for what? Just for money? And from what Will said, like I said, they offered him less than what AEW offered anyway. Well, I wouldn't take that deal. Triple H probably wouldn't take that deal. Triple H, you know, notoriously didn't turn up on SmackDown because he didn't want to work Tuesdays. He didn't want to grind. You see what I mean? It's a bit of a silly excuse. Triple H has a very famous friend called Kevin Nash, who was notorious for getting the most money for the least amount of work. And I don't shoot him down for that. Like, that's what we all want to do, right? You don't want to work a lot. You just want to get paid a lot and just work minimal. Like, who doesn't want to do that? So yeah, Triple H was out of order for making that jab. And we saw Will Ospreay make the retort on Dynamite a couple of weeks ago. And I thought it was really good of Ospreay to come out in the press conference following Dynasty to basically address that and say, yeah, you know, on reflection, I shouldn't have done that. I'm above that. If I'm the best wrestler in the world, I do my talking in the ring and I perform to the best I can. And it wasn't like an apology or anything like that. He said he doesn't regret it, but he said it's something that's behind him and something he's not going to do again because it's below him ultimately. And that's just what I want from him. That's just what I want from AEW in general, because you said that this is where the best wrestle. So for the love of God, just wrestle. Keep the drama to the company that focuses on drama and entertainment with WWE. You guys just wrestle. Because when you guys just wrestle, no one's better. And I say all of that. Toni Storm then went and had her press conference and made jabs left, right and center. It's just unnecessary at this point. But getting back to Will Ospreay, I just feel like through these performances he has for AEW, that he's literally just notching up one by one on his belt. Just like it's nothing. He will give you this kind of level of match on TV or on pay-per-view, backstage or in the car park, over water, under, like it doesn't matter. Like this guy is just going to perform to such a high level, no matter the location, no matter the place, whether there are people watching, whether there's 100 people watching, whether there's 70,000 people watching, this is who he is. And from watching him come in at Revolution to the TV matches he's had, to the crowd reaction he's been getting, to that fantastic match he had with Bryan Danielson at AEW Dynasty, which I'm 100% sure will be match of the year 2024. No matter who does your match ratings, who you want to listen to, anyone that watches WWE and AEW and maybe even New Japan fairly, that match will be match of the year. It's not going to get topped. And like I say, as I watch all of these stuff from Will Ospreay, I just can't help but think AEW now have a face of the company. It's this guy, the crowd are behind him. Will Ospreay is the face of AEW and he's been here for like 5 minutes. It's crazy. Like there is going to be nobody that topples him from this. And you can see the passion and the love for AEW, the love for Tony Khan, being able to do what he does best on a large, large platform compared to where he's previously been. Given the conditions to, you know, go home and be a family man and then come to work, fly in for work every Wednesday. I just feel like everything is working and moving in the direction that Will Ospreay needs it, including the fans. And I feel everything is going to just fall in place for him. He is going to be the poster boy. And I'm going to liken Will Ospreay's rise in AEW and what I effectively think it will be him becoming the face of AEW to a certain David Beckham. There was a time David Beckham was the biggest footballer in England just by like popularity alone. And he made a big transfer move over to Real Madrid. And this is that move, I think. This is almost that move for Will Ospreay. He's become a Galactico over in AEW and he's a poster boy. He's an absolute poster boy. Like, I just think it's a matter of time before maybe other entities, mainstream media, sponsorships start falling and, you know, falling at the feet of Will Ospreay. Because the crowd swell around him, and especially the whole thing where, you know, the US, they love a Brit, they love the accent, they love it, they love the cheeky chappiness. Like Will Ospreay, everything is working in his favor. And I know, you know, we're living in an era now where, as of the time of recording, Swerve Strickland is the AEW world champion, but unfortunately he's not the top guy in AEW. Will Ospreay is. And I hate to kind of pit them against each other. Many have said this before, It's almost like this ticking time bomb that Swerve Strickland is on right now, just becoming AEW World Champion. It's a ticking time bomb until Will Ospreay takes that title. Maybe 4 to 5 months we're looking at, and then we're going to have a new world champion, because there's only going to be a certain amount of time they can keep Ospreay and Swerve Strickland away from each other. We're finishing 2024 with Will Ospreay with that title, because Will Ospreay is the face of AEW. By the time you guys are listening to this, WWE would have crowned a new Women's World Champion. And to be honest, I've got a lot to say on that whole situation. I think Rhea Ripley was a fantastic character, a fantastic first person to hold that iteration of the World Championship. And although I know her world title run started off very slowly, I was very vocal about it. Zelina Vega, Natalia, not really people we ever believe is going to beat a Rhea Ripley. It got pace. It really eventually got pace, especially going into WrestleMania. Things picked up and she was looking great. I mean, throughout the year, the minute she became champion, all the work that the Judgment Day done to build the aura around her, you know, that's what almost made her kind of get away with having a bit of a lackluster run at first. Just the aura building around Rhea Ripley. And obviously today we're in a world where Rhea Ripley has vacated the world title because of injury, which I think is not the worst thing in the world, because she never lost the title and it doesn't look like it's a super serious injury to keep her out forever, ever, ever. Like, she will be back later on this year, which is great news already. But one, if this was a man, like we've recently seen with like a Seth Rollins before WrestleMania, would they have made them vacate the title? Maybe not. Maybe not for a variety of reasons. One probably being because there's other titles on the show that can help fill that void. Which made me start thinking, does WWE need a women's mid-card title? A women's Intercontinental Championship or a women's United States Championship? Pretty much how NXT have just employed a NXT North American Women's Championship, which obviously they're yet to crown the champion for. But do the WWE main roster women need something like that? Because I just feel without Rhea Ripley, this is why they're acting so hastily, in my opinion, to crown a new women's world champion. Because there's nothing else. There's a tag division, which, I mean, they don't often put to good use. So right now, those women on the Raw brand don't have anything really to fight for. So they got to get a new champion in there. But it annoys me because they're rushing something that was built up so well. All the good work that went into that title, they're just going to give it away to someone in a battle royal or something like that. Where I feel they could have done a tournament. They could have done several things to kind of get to the point where we now are rightly crowning a new champion. But here we are. I do think that a lot of the women in WWE, of course you have the Becky Lynch's, which are, you know, top brass, that's top shelf stuff there. Nia Jax, I feel like in the recent last few months, although she missed out on a place on the WrestleMania card, which is a massive shame, I do think she's been crossing over into that women's main event scene on Raw. The rest of those women, I think, are pretty much mid-card of that division. And a mid-card title, I think, could do someone like a Liv Morgan very, very well. A Shayna Baszler even, very, very well, and could kind of help to revitalize a Shayna Baszler. But I hear what people are saying, and a lot of people think that Liv Morgan should be the new Women's World Champion. And granted, like I said, by the time this is out, they would have crowned that person. And I'll say now, even if it is Liv Morgan, I don't think it should be Liv Morgan. Because I think Liv Morgan needs to go on a journey. I think they really need to straighten out her character and get the character right. Pretty much like they're doing with Chad Gable and they've done with others. Before we get to the point of crowning them, they need to know who they are before they start trying to sell us on who they are and stuff like that. So I definitely think that, you know, a women's mid-card title could have been very effective in this situation. And then you never know, if we had something like that with a solid champion, Rhea Ripley might have just held the belt and they might have just done shenanigans for 3 months to just, you know, keep her active, keep her on TV as she recovered and got ready again. It's very interesting that, you know, like I said, if this was in the men's division, I think there's not the haste to make them vacate it. I think they might get away with it. But with the women, they're not kind of given that luxury. It's interesting. I think it's a very interesting conversation. And I don't know, you know, I don't have a preference whether it's intercontinental or US or whatever the case is. But I definitely think that the women do need something, injury or not. I do think there's just a lot of talents there. And the mid-card title could be like a floating championship. They could have, you know, one mid-card champion, an intercontinental women's champion that goes to both brands. Or they could do something like put the women's tag championships on Raw as a permanent fixture and put the mid-card title on SmackDown or something like that. Like, they've got hours to fill, they've got TV to fill. So I feel like something like this shouldn't be like an idea that is like far-fetched or anything like that. They've already recognized what that can do. Look at the amount of women, great women stars that they have in NXT. They've given them a mid-card belt. And to be honest, NXT probably have a better featured women's division than the Raw women's division currently anyway. So they definitely deserve it. But it'll be interesting to see who they crown champion. Like I say, by the time you guys are listening to this, you're going to know who it was. And whether that person is like someone that is like a transitional champion. Like, I think Nia Jax would be a really good world heavyweight champion or world champion for the women, because she could hold it, be very good, transition it onto someone that they've built up in a couple of months' time. I think Becky Lynch would sour fans, and I don't think Becky Lynch is tone deaf, even if it's for helping us out now. Come and do us a solid, Becky. I don't think she will want it, just because it's, she knows how the internet works. She knows how fans will be. So I definitely think that, you know, Liv Morgan's name's in there as a shout. I wouldn't do it. I would wait to build up Liv Morgan, because I think there's more stock there when you build up Liv Morgan and then do it. Nia Jax for me. My outside choice, Shayna Baszler. I think Shayna Baszler would be great to revitalize her. And if I'm even going to go more outside from that, I probably would go Chelsea Green, because I think Chelsea Green could at least be great fun with the championship in the meantime, before they build up someone ready to take it. But yeah, for me, I don't think it's a bad idea. Like I say, they implemented it on NXT. Give the women on the main roster a mid-card title. They'll be very grateful for it. You've got the TV time for it. So why not? It makes sense. And then maybe we wouldn't have to kind of be so hasty if someone went down with injury, and we've already got another mid-card title that kind of keep us going, so that we could do something more, better thought out to crown that missing champion. Post-WrestleMania always feels like a brand new season, like a football season. Like, you've had, like, you know, the main show now kind of coming back, it's pre-season has happened and we're getting into it, and AEW, I guess, with Dynasty kicked off the new season. But WWE, we've got Backlash next weekend, bank holiday weekend in the UK, so that should be really fun and a decent show. They're doing it in France, they're doing it in Lyon in France, which is, you know, a different city other than Paris, because people would assume, you know, it says Backlash France, they're doing it in Paris. No, it's actually in Lyon, so that should be a good show. I think next week or so, we're actually going to speak on Cody Rhodes and, you know, the first few weeks of this title reign, because I know some people have started saying some stuff about this title reign already. He will be facing AJ Styles at that Lyon Backlash show, which I think is a really good opponent. You know, AJ Styles will give him a very, very good match, which will be good. But yeah, people have really started talking, and there'll probably be some developments on the Bloodline, which are the Bloodline. It's like the best story wrestling has ever told, isn't it? Like, the Bloodline is great. So we can speak on that possibly next week as well as whomsoever is now the women's world champion. I think that's going to be fun. And of course, there's going to be fallout from AEW Dynasty, because they put on a brilliant show and now they're going to move towards their next pay-per-view, which is towards the end of May. The date escapes me right now, but it's Double or Nothing. That is where we're getting the official in-ring debut of Mercedes Moné. About bloody time, if you ask me. But I'm looking forward to it, man. The next couple of months, they're going to be very, very fun. A lot of content is going to be out there. I recently reached 2,000 subscribers on my YouTube channel. So thank you for everyone that's been subscribing and, you know, joining us on there. A lot of content's going up on there. So if you are just a podcast listener and didn't even know I had a YouTube channel, I have a YouTube channel. So yeah, you can go over to there as well, WrestleManiac UK, and watch some of the videos that go out on that channel every day. Every day there's new videos, guys. So keeping you lot busy. But need to get this one out to you guys. So I appreciate everyone for hitting the download button and joining me in the first place. Have a good week, man. Let's get out of this wrestling tribalism, please. AEW and WWE, no one's innocent here. Like, let's stop it and just enjoy what these men and women are putting on for us every week, sometimes bloody twice a week. Like, let's just enjoy it. WrestleManiac UK, hit me up on the X, not Twitter, X. Let me know what you think on some of those conversations we had today. Do WWE need a women's mid-card title? Talk to me about your thoughts about Swerve becoming champion. Talk to me about Chris Jericho. Is he killing these young stars in AEW? And come and celebrate Will Ospreay with me, because that boy is taking AEW to the moon. I can guarantee you that. Let's come have a conversation. And you can follow me on Instagram as well, WrestleManiac.uk. And of course, like I said, YouTube, WrestleManiac UK. Come over there and subscribe. Same time next week, guys. I appreciate you. WrestleManiac UK signing out, and I'll see you soon.